everyone, and welcome back to Murder, Mother and Me, where each week we will dive into some of the most infamous murders, mysteries and everything in between.
So if, like us, you are intrigued by all things true crime, you're in the right place.
I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your other host, Patty. I'm the mother.
And I'm the me.
As always, thank you for all the support so far on our podcast.
Please don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Murder, Mother and Me Podcast. Share with your friends and write us a review.
But only if it's a good one.
This week we are talking about a story that takes place in 2011. Here are a few interesting facts about that year.
Prince William and Kate Middleton got married at Westminster Abbey and 2 billion people watched worldwide. Singer Amy Winehouse died on July the 23rd, 2011 at age 27 in London. The FBI's most wanted man, Osama bin Laden, was killed by the US Navy SEALs and CIA operatives in Pakistan.
Right everyone, let's get on with this week's episode. This is the case of Spreckles Mansion and the death of Rebecca Zahau. In July 2011, 32-year-old Rebecca Zahau was discovered hanging from a balcony at the Spreckles Mansion in Coronado, California. Her hands and feet were bound and a cryptic message was found nearby. To this day, questions persist about what really happened in the mansion that night. But before we go any further, let's go right back to the beginning. Rebecca Zahau was born on March 15, 1979, in a small rural village in Myanmar, which many of us know as Burma. Her parents, originally from the Chin ethnic group, raised their children with deep religious values and a strong sense of community. When Rebecca was young, the family fled political unrest in Myanmar and settled in Nepal. From there, they moved to Germany and eventually to the United States. Rebecca spent her formative years in America, where she thrived. She was intelligent, multilingual, and fiercely independent. Rebecca pursued a variety of jobs over the years, from working in ophthalmology to fitness training. She was described as creative, artistic, and deeply spiritual, someone who valued family and faith above all else. I just need to ask you, what the hell is ophthalmology?
Well, it's all to do with the eyes, isn't it? So testing people's eyes and things to do with the eyes.
So she was like an eye nurse, kind of?
Yeah, I don't think she was an eye doctor, was she? I think she was like an assistant.
Now let's fast forward to 2008. Rebecca was working at an ophthalmology office when she crossed paths with Jonah Shachnai, a wealthy pharmaceutical CEO who lived in Arizona at the time. Jonah was successful, charismatic, and considerably older than Rebecca. He was 54 to her 29. Jonah was no stranger to relationships. He had been married twice before and had three children, two teenagers from his first marriage and Max, a six-year-old boy from his second marriage to Dina Shachnai. Despite their differences in age and background, Rebecca and Jonah began dating.
One thing I did notice then was that she's around about the same age when she died as you are now, and she almost shares the same birthday as you as well.
Yeah, her birthday is one day before mine.
Don't you think that's weird? Does that give you a weird sense?
Not really, because I feel like there's probably billions of people with the same birthday. By 2011, the couple were deeply involved. Rebecca had left their job to be with Jonah full-time and had stepped into the role of caretaker for his children, especially Max. Jonah owned the Spreckles Mansion, a historic beachfront property in Coronado, California, where the family spent much of their time.
So it sounds like Jonah was really well-to-do, doesn't it?
Sounds like he was very well-off, and also kind of used Rebecca as a bit of a nanny as well.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, doesn't it, what the actual motive was, the reason why he moved her into the mansion. I mean, she was a really attractive girl, so that was probably part of it, but I can't help but think that there was an ulterior motive in that it was free sort of childcare for him. I think he had a couple of older teenagers, which I don't think she got on that well with. I don't think they related very well to each other, but the younger child, Max, I think they had a really good relationship.
Friends and family described Rebecca's relationship with Max as particularly close. She doted on him, and he adored her. It seemed like Rebecca had found her place in Jonah's life, until everything began to fall apart that July. Rebecca's life took a tragic turn on July the 11th, 2011, when an event occurred that would forever change the course of her story. It was the day that Max Shachnai, Jonah's six-year-old son, suffered a devastating accident inside the Spreckles Mansion. According to the official account, Rebecca was at home that morning with Max and her teenage sister, Exena, while Jonah was out of the house running errands. At some point that morning, Rebecca claimed she heard a loud crash. She rushed to investigate and found Max lying unconscious at the base of the grand staircase in the foyer. Nearby were Max's razor scooter and a chandelier that had been pulled from the ceiling shattered on the floor. Rebecca later told authorities that Max may have been riding his scooter near the stairs, lost his balance, and tumbled over the second story banister. It is believed that in the fall, Max tried to grab the chandelier to break his fall, but the force of his weight caused it to detach from the ceiling. The scene was chaotic. Rebecca screamed for her sister, who called 911 while Rebecca attempted CPR. In the call, her sister can be heard saying that Max was not breathing. Paramedics rushed Max to Rady Children's Hospital in San Diego. His injuries were catastrophic. Doctors discovered significant brain trauma, spinal cord injuries, and broken facial bones. Max was placed on life support, but the prognosis was grim.
So that must have been some form, wasn't it? That balcony must have been quite high.
Well, it says a second story balcony, so that is pretty high, isn't it? And he's only 6 years old as well.
Yeah.
He's a baby.
He's come down the stairs, and as he's gone, he's tried to grab onto the chandelier. Or did he?
It says that they think he's fell over the balcony somehow.
He might have been climbing, just because he was on the scooter. You know what they're like? They climb up, don't they?
He could have had the scooter in his hand while he was trying to climb up.
If no one saw it happen, I mean, it could have been a number of things, couldn't it?
I think it's one of those things where, because none of them were present, I don't think they actually know what happened, still. I mean, I think having a young child myself, and obviously you've had three young children at one point as well.
Three young demons, more like.
Three young demons, and I've got a little demon right now as well, and he's 2.5, and even now you can't take your eyes off him for a second, otherwise, you know, he'll be climbing on the table, he'll want to jump off, he'll be halfway up the stairs before you've even managed to turn around.
Yeah, I just think it's a bit strange that at 6 years of age, you know, he's going along on his scooter and this has never happened before. I wonder what made him do something that day differently, you know, at 6 years of age. And I know they're only still young, but I wouldn't have expected him to suddenly get an idea into his head and, you know, hang from the balcony or something. But maybe he did.
Also, in terms of Rebecca as well, I can only imagine how she must have felt running out and seeing him lying there. Because obviously she's going to feel responsible, isn't she? He's in her care, essentially.
Well, she obviously knew him well enough to think that he was okay to play on his own. I don't know what she was doing at the time or where she was. And his sister was there. So I don't really know what happened. I don't suppose anyone ever will.
The accident was devastating for everyone involved, but Rebecca seemed particularly distraught. Friends and family later said she felt enormous guilt, even though there was no evidence she had done anything wrong. She blamed herself for not being able to prevent the accident and was inconsolable. Jonah Shachnai, meanwhile, was at the hospital, where he remained by Max's bedside day and night. Max's mother, Dina Shachnai, also rushed to the hospital. Although Rebecca and Dina had a strained relationship, they now shared the same pain of seeing Max in such a fragile state. During this time, Rebecca's text to her family and friends conveyed her deep emotional turmoil. She mentioned feeling numb and told her sister Mary that she was praying for a miracle. Max died on July the 16th due to brain damage caused by oxygen deprivation resulting from his injuries. What no one could have predicted was how quickly another tragedy would strike, and how it would raise more questions than answers.
Well, they were saying she was in deep emotional turmoil. I think that's quite normal, isn't it? After something like this, you would definitely feel responsible if that child was in your care at the time.
Yeah, and she obviously had a really close bond with little Max as well, so I think it's going to hit her quite hard, even though he's not her son.
And this relationship with Jonah's ex-wife, Dina, they're saying it's a strained relationship, so that's not good, is it? You know, if you were the mother of that child, it's only natural to blame the person that was looking after him at the time.
Well, I would imagine from Dina's perspective, her ex-husband's gone off and got this a lot younger than him new lover, and she's now living in the house and looking after her kids, essentially. So it's never going to be a good relationship, is it?
And especially if Max and Rebecca had a good relationship as well, there might have been some jealousy involved there.
So what would you do then if you were in Dina's situation? Would you completely blame Rebecca?
100%. I'm sorry, but I would.
I don't see any reason why, how anyone wouldn't blame the person that was in.
That's what I'm saying. It's just natural, isn't it? I think when any tragedy occurs, it's human nature to want to blame somebody. And they didn't have a good relationship anyway, so, you know, she was the one, Rebecca was the one looking after Max on the day. So she didn't like her to start with, did she? This just puts kind of like the cherry on the icing on the cake, doesn't it?
Adds fuel to the fire, doesn't it? The day after Max's accident, July the 12th, 2011, was marked by an eerie calm before the storm. Rebecca spent much of the day at the hospital with Jonah, Dina was also there, and tensions between the two women were palpable. Jonah's brother, Adam Shacknai, had flown in from Tennessee to offer support. Adam, a tugboat captain, was staying in the guest house on the Spreckles Mansion property. That evening, Rebecca, Jonah, and Adam had dinner together. According to Jonah, the conversation revolved around Max's condition and the possibility of organ donation if the unthinkable happened. After dinner, Jonah returned to the hospital to spend the night with Max, leaving Rebecca and Adam at the mansion.
That's a bit sad, isn't it, to sit there talking about organ donation. I know that's something that people sometimes have to face, but imagine sitting around the bedside of your six-year-old child having to consider that prospect.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, and it said from the beginning, you know, the prognosis of his injuries was grim, so I don't think any of them are expecting a good outcome, really.
No, they would have been told by the doctors, wouldn't they, realistically, what the chances of survival were, and obviously they weren't very good. And that would have just added to the pressure, wouldn't it, with Rebecca and Dina?
I can only imagine how Rebecca must have felt in this situation as well, because she's in this fairly new relationship with this guy. All of a sudden, she's been left with his son, and his son's basically nearly killed himself by falling over a balcony, we think. So what kind of position does that put her in? She knows that they're going to blame her.
Yeah, definitely.
Rebecca sent a series of text messages that evening. She exchanged messages with her sister Mary, expressing her continued distress over Max's accident. Her last known activity was around 10:30 p.m. when she viewed a text message from Mary that Rebecca never replied to. By all accounts, Rebecca was alone in the main house that night, with Adam staying in the guest house. But by the next morning, everything would change.
So this brother, this is Jonah's brother, Adam, who works on boats or something.
Yeah, it says he's a tugboat captain.
He's staying in the grounds of the mansion, but Rebecca's just on her own in the mansion house itself.
Yeah, she's in the main house, and it says that he's in the guest house, which I assume is not part of the main property.
I wonder how far away it was from the main property, just in case we need to know that later on.
At 6:48 a.m. on July the 13th, 2011, Adam Shacknai called 911. In a calm and steady voice, he told the dispatcher that he had found Rebecca Zahau hanging from a balcony. Adam claimed he had seen Rebecca's body hanging from the balcony when he stepped outside that morning. He said he retrieved a knife from the guest house, cut her down, and attempted CPR.
So the guest house must have been within, you know,
eyeshot of the mansion.
Eyeshot.
Is that what you say?
Eyeline or
eyeshot?
What's an eyeshot?
Like, I don't know.
Like I shot the sheriff.
Yeah. I shot the sheriff.
But I could not shoot the deputy.
So he must have been able to see into the house from the guest house, or from at least near the guest house, because it says that he's seen her from outside. So there must have, maybe, I'm imagining like a big window or something that you can see through.
Or maybe he just stepped outside, but wasn't it early in the morning?
Yeah, it was like 10 to 7, so 6:48 a.m. Why was he awake?
I don't know. Well, it's not that early.
Is that what you were getting at?
Yeah, I was thinking, was it like 6 o'clock or something? And people do get up early. But you know what I find strange about that, though? The fact that he got a knife out of the... It says he got a knife to run and cut the body down. I just think instinctually you would just run over. Why would you stop and go to the kitchen and get a knife?
Well, the only thing I can think of in terms of him going to get a knife is that I'm imagining it says that she was hanging from a balcony. Now, that balcony might be too high for him to grab her and get her down without having to cut the rope. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, maybe it's just me.
So his instinct might have been, I need to get that body down, but I can't get her down without cutting the rope.
I think my instinct will just be to run towards it, you know, without stopping to think that. I don't know whether that's strange or not. I'm just saying, it may not be.
Is it also a bit weird that it says when he called 911, his voice was calm and steady? My voice would certainly not be calm and steady if I'd just found my brother's girlfriend hanging from a balcony in the house.
In a calm and steady voice?
I mean, that can mean multiple things, can't it? But I don't know, that's a bit eerie to me.
So now, you see, I'm already suspicious about this Adam Shacknai, right? Because he stopped to get a knife, and now he's on the phone, and he's speaking in a calm and steady voice. But some people, again, we always say this, react in shock in different ways, don't they?
When first responders arrived, the scene they found was as shocking as it was bizarre. Rebecca was hanging from a second-story balcony by a red rope that had been tied to the bed inside the room. She was completely naked. Her hands were tied behind her back with intricate knots, and her feet were also bound. a gag made from a blue t-shirt was stuffed in her mouth and tied around her head. Scrawled in black paint on the bedroom door was a cryptic message. She saved him. Can you save her? ? Despite Adam's efforts to perform CPR, Rebecca was pronounced dead at the scene. Right, we need to just take a pause here because that was a lot of information
that
and now my head's baffled.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know this case, but I've not read about it for a long time. And now it's all coming back to me. It's the most bizarre suicide scene, if that's what they want to call it, that I've ever heard of.
Well, straight away, I've never heard of anyone ever, out of all the true crime stories that I've ever researched and listened to over the years, I've never heard of someone that has committed suicide by hanging, that has bound their hands behind the back, bound their feet together, stuffed a gag in their own mouth.
And let's not forget the fact that she was completely naked. I mean, what is the purpose of that? You know, as a woman, you wouldn't take all your clothes off and hang yourself from a second-story balcony.
Well, straight away, that says to me that someone wanted to embarrass her. Someone wanted to bring shame on her. That's how I see that straight away, especially with the gag in the mouth and the hands being tied behind the back, and she was fully naked.
I think you've also got to remember that the culture that Rebecca came from, it was quite shameful to be naked or, you know, so why would she do that? She was quite a conservative kind of moralistic woman, so you wouldn't take all your clothes off and do that and bring shame on your family, would you?
Yeah, it said at the beginning of the story, it said that she was deeply religious and from a really religious family as well, so it just doesn't add up, that, does it?
Not at all, no. And like you said, the whole thing, just from that first bit now, hanging from a second floor balcony, naked, it's almost, like you say, bringing shame on it. It's a display, isn't it? It's a public display as a punishment. That's what it feels like.
Well, as far as I'm aware, most hangings, when people commit suicide by hanging, they try and do it in more of an isolated area where maybe it might take people longer to find them, or maybe there's no chance of someone being able to stop them or save them. So to do it in the middle of a mansion, which, like you've just said, is really on display, that just doesn't make sense to me.
I'm just wondering, because I can't remember, if she actually died from hanging, or this rag that was stuffed, this t-shirt that was stuffed in her mouth, was she suffocated first? Because then if she was, the hanging part serves no purpose really, does it? If I remember right, I'm not sure if, you know, like when people hang, there's two ways. If a short drop will break the neck, but a long sort of, you know, hanging there will choke them or suffocate them. Surely she would have just jumped off if she did it herself. It almost seems to me, again, like it's punishing her even further by just hanging her there. Do you know how she died? Do you know what the findings were? Well, we'll find it out as we go on, I think.
I think also that the message on the door is just bizarre as well. She saved him. Can you save her? What could that possibly mean?
Well, who is the him?
Exactly.
She saved him. Does that refer to Max, the child?
And the her, can you save her? Are they talking about Rebecca?
I mean, if you're going to commit suicide, why would you write that? She's referring to herself as a third person, isn't she? You know, if she did write it, which I don't think she did, but you wouldn't refer to it as that, would you? So sounds like it's written by an outside person, doesn't it, that message?
It's one of them things, I think, where it's been done on purpose to either detract from something or point the finger at someone.
Like a red herring,
like
or,
a, red herring,
or
exactly.
A clue. It could be either, couldn't it? But, you know, she's got this t-shirt stuffed in her mouth and tied behind her head. Who on earth does that when you're going to commit suicide? So she would literally have to put a t-shirt in her mouth, tie it around her head, tie her feet together first with intricate knots, tie her hands behind her back with intricate knots, hop to the balcony somehow and get herself over the edge. That is just, it doesn't take a genius to see that. That doesn't add up, does it?
When police arrived at the Spreckles mansion on the morning of July 13th, they were confronted with a scene that was both chilling and deeply perplexing. Rebecca Zahau's death appeared anything but straightforward. The San Diego County Sheriff's Department quickly launched an investigation, but their approach raised eyebrows almost immediately. Just weeks after Rebecca's death, they publicly declared their conclusion. Rebecca had died by suicide. According to investigators, Rebecca had been overcome with guilt and grief following Max's tragic accident. They theorized that she had meticulously planned her death, tying her own hands and feet, writing the cryptic message on the door, and then leaping from the balcony to hang herself. but this explanation raised far more questions than answers. Let's break down some of the most puzzling aspects of the case. Rebecca's hands were tied behind her back with red nautical rope. Her feet were also bound, and a series of intricate knots secured the bindings. The sheriff's department insisted that it was possible for Rebecca to tie herself up in this manner, citing a demonstration that they conducted with a volunteer. They explained that Rebecca could have tied her hands in front of her body, slipped the bindings over her head, and positioned them behind her back. However, many experts have challenged this theory. Forensic pathologists, crime scene analysts, and even escape artists have weighed in, calling it highly improbable, if not impossible, that Rebecca could have tied herself up so effectively and then carried out a hanging.
That's just ridiculous. I'm sorry, she'd have to have been Houdini to do that.
I mean, it just doesn't even make any sense, that does it, to even try and say that it's possible?
It doesn't even make any sense in the sense that if you're going to commit suicide, why on earth are you going to do all that first? What is the purpose of doing all that first? Surely you just want to get it over and done with. And even if it's being planned, you're going to do it the simplest way. If you want to tie your hands behind your back, you're not going to tie it with, what does it say, red nautical rope?
But what was the purpose of her tying her feet as well then? That's what I can't understand. Fair enough, if you want to tie your hands behind your back because you think you might be able to save yourself at some point, but why your feet?
Well, I suppose they could argue that if you're kicking your legs about, you know, you might be able to cling on with your big long toes, I don't know. But to me, that's more an indication that someone's disabled by doing that, you know, so that she couldn't fight back.
I just want to make a note at this point as well about the rope that was used. It was a red nautical rope.
I know, that's
and
what
we
I
know
just said.
So far that Adam Shachnai he worked on boats.
Yeah. Were these intricate knots, were they sailor-type knots, do you know?
Well, I guess, you know, there's not a lot of jobs that require you to know how to do intricate knots, but we know that one of them is when you work on boats. So that's two little things there straight away, the red nautical rope and the intricate knots that were secured.
Plus his weird behaviour earlier on that I do think is a little bit strange.
That are now kind of tipping the scales in his direction in my mind.
Well, what's the chances, really? You know, suddenly he appears on the scene, she's found hanging, and it doesn't look like a suicide, even though they're ruling it as that at the moment. But, you know, and she's tied with red nautical rope.
Rebecca had a blue t-shirt wrapped around her neck with part of the fabric stuffed into her mouth as a gag. This detail baffled investigators. Why would someone intending to hang themselves gag themselves first? The presence of the gag has led many to believe that Rebecca was restrained and silenced by someone else before her death. I mean, they've even just said it themselves, the investigators. Why would someone do that when they're going to hang themselves, but yet they still go and rule her death as a suicide?
Well, I think probably what they would argue was that she's done that herself to stop herself from screaming out to get help. I suppose they could say that, but it just doesn't seem likely, does it, that you're going to go through all that trouble? You know, if you intend to kill yourself, you're not going to scream for help, are you, basically?
I'm not sure if you've leapt from a second floor balcony with a rope around your neck, you would be able to scream anyway.
It's just, it doesn't make sense, does it? You know, it's like adding two and two together and making 17.
Perhaps the most infamous detail of the case is the black painted message on the bedroom door. She saved him, can you save her? The phrase has been interpreted in countless ways. Some see it as a cryptic suicide note written by Rebecca in reference to Max's accident. Others believe it was a taunt from her killer meant to mislead investigators. Handwriting analysis was inconclusive. Police couldn't definitively prove whether Rebecca wrote the message herself or if someone else was responsible.
I think this message was actually written in paint because I think Rebecca painted and it was actually scrawled in paint. But that is a very strange message. It kind of reminds me of the Ray Rivera case where he left that note,
yeah,
you know,
behind the computer screen.
With weird references on. It's a similar kind of thing, isn't it?
This message on the door, to me, is a complete red herring, in my opinion. I think it's to point them in directions that whoever's done this wanted them to go.
It seems to me that it was written in reference to what happened. And it's written by another person. She's not...
But it says she saved him, but no one saved Max because he's in hospital in critical condition, so no one saved him.
Well, when he fell, Rebecca was the one that was there and called, you know, her and her sister called the paramedics. So she was the one who actually, when you say saved him, got him to the hospital. So you could look at it that way. Can you save her? So
is that a taunt to Jonah to say, can you save Rebecca?
Yeah, or was it a taunt to someone else? Was it against her family or something even?
But this conversation we're having right now, I feel like whoever wrote that, this is the conversations they would want you to have.
But it points more to a killer writing that, doesn't it, than a person who's committing suicide writing it, so...
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. I think the killers wrote this,
Wouldn't you write it if she was murdered and you were the killer, wouldn't you write it as if she was saying it herself? To make it look more like suicide? Why make it look like it's homicide?
That's what I'm saying, though. I don't think this message actually really has any relevance to anything. I think they've just wrote it to just add an extra thing in to throw people off.
I don't know. I think it might be a taunt. I think whoever did this, and I think she was murdered, I'm 99.9% certain on that, has been very angry with it. This is a very personal thing. It was like they wanted to humiliate her and they wanted to make sure she was dead. She had the gag in her mouth. She was tied up. She was put over the balcony. Someone, I think, who had extreme hatred for her. And the only reason I can think that might be is because of this accident with the child. So it's got to be family related, I think.
Another troubling aspect of the case was the lack of DNA evidence. Minimal DNA or fingerprints were found on the ropes, the balcony railing, or the knife Adam claimed to have used to cut Rebecca down. This seemed unusual, especially for a supposed suicide.
Somebody's wiped that scene down.
Yeah, and they're saying there was no prints found on the knife that he used. So has he wiped that knife?
Well, he was the one who had the knife, so draw your own conclusions. So if doesn't it, you know, if someone's going to wipe a scene clean and he's gone over, Adam Shacknight has gone over with the knife, and that's clean as well, only he could have cleaned that knife because the crime had already been committed. So this was after the fact, wasn't it? He was cutting her down when she was hanging. So if he's cleaned the knife, it couldn't have been Rebecca, could it? Because she was dead. So therefore, isn't it logical to assume that the person who cleaned the knife cleaned the rest of the prints up as well? Because why would there be no prints on the knife?
Surely the police picked up on this straight away. Is that not like key stage one police work?
Well, you know, I'm like Helen Mirren and Prime Suspect me, so should have had me on the case.
Rebecca's autopsy revealed more than just signs of hanging. She had several blunt force injuries on her head, which investigators claimed were caused by her body hitting the balcony during the hanging. However, some forensic experts have argued that these injuries are more consistent with a violent assault. So that kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier about did she have any other injuries other than potentially a broken neck or suffocation, and it turns out that she did. So she had blunt force injuries on her head, which is usually from some kind of beating or being hit over the head with something. I can't see her knocking her head on a balcony that she's hanging from to cause those kind of injuries where some experts could deem it to be from a violent assault.
I don't think it was anything to do with the hanging. I mean, I suppose if you jump and you swing and you could, but not with that kind of force, I don't think. And that's what I was saying before. Somebody's obviously, I think, restrained her and maybe bashed her about a little bit before, but I'm just interested to know what her actual cause of death was.
So basically, I couldn't find anywhere online of the official autopsy that the police did what her cause of death was. But obviously, they ruled it a suicide, so you can only assume that it was suicide by hanging. But then what happened was her family ordered a second autopsy by an external pathologist, and it came back that he found fractures in her throat, which were caused by manual strangulation, not suicidal hanging. So you've got two different options here. You've got one thing that the police are saying, and now one thing that a independent pathologist is saying. So who do you believe?
I think I believe the pathologist, the second one. I think he's looked into it in more detail. I think there's a tendency to, when the police get there, you know, if they make the mind up with suicide, then they don't, although every coroner should be doing the job properly, you know, I think it's kind of like a given then that that's what it is, and maybe they just don't look into it as deeply as they should.
Sometimes they just tick the boxes that need to be ticked, don't they?
I'm sure sometimes that does happen.
When the Sheriff's Department announced their conclusion of suicide, it sparked outrage, especially from Rebecca's family. The Zahau family was adamant that Rebecca would never have taken her own life, let alone in such a strange and theatrical manner. They pointed out that Rebecca was deeply religious and had a strong belief that suicide was a sin. Her sister Mary said Rebecca was looking forward to the future and had been discussing plans for her upcoming birthday. For many, the case felt rushed, as if law enforcement wanted to avoid a lengthy and complicated investigation involving a powerful family like the Shacknais.
I was just going to say that then, money talks, doesn't it? So it's a bit like, what's that one with the ginger fella?
Yeah, Alec Murdoch, yeah. And his family. I mean, that's a case that I want to cover on this podcast anyway, so we'll save that for another day. But yeah, it's a very similar thing where you don't know people with money who they've got in their pockets.
Yeah.
And I think it's also a case of what you said before, of the police have probably got there and thought, they've made their mind up about what it is straight away, and they've thought, how can we just get this filed away as quick as possible? Which is actually horrendous.
Kind of like an open and shut case, and they didn't want to challenge this family, you know, because they are kind of powerful within the local community and everything. And it's just adding more work, isn't it, to their workload? So if they can get away with it, I'm sure sometimes that is what happens. And Rebecca's family wouldn't have had the money, I don't think, to face it. They're not as powerful, are they?
Dissatisfied with the official ruling, the Zahau family launched their own investigation. They hired Dr. Cyril Wecht, a renowned forensic pathologist, to review the evidence. Dr. Wecht strongly disagreed with the suicide conclusion, stating that Rebecca's injuries and the crime scene pointed to homicide. In 2018, the Zahau family filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Adam Shaknai, Jonah's brother, claiming he was responsible for Rebecca's murder.
So they thought it as well?
So they thought it, yeah. I mean, I don't know how you can think any other option other than it's him. I know there's no concrete evidence, but, you know, circumstantial evidence is a real thing, isn't it?
Well, he was in close proximity, wasn't he? He was related, wasn't he, to Jonah? He was his brother. Max was his nephew, so he might have felt anger. Or could it have been that Jonah was behind it and, you know, to take the spotlight off himself, it was easier for Adam to do it?
I just find it a bit weird that he was left in the guest house alone while she was in the main house, while no one else was there. So there's no actual witness to anything, because it was just them two there, and one of them is now dead.
And we don't know what Max's mother, Dina, we don't know what her relationship to Adam Shaknai was either, do we? We know that she didn't have a good relationship with Rebecca, and then this tragedy happened. So obviously, you know, she probably felt, I would say, extreme hate for her, wouldn't she? So was it a family sort of plot to get rid of her?
During the civil trial, the Zahau family attorneys painted a chilling picture of what they believed happened that night. They argued that Adam Shaknai confronted Rebecca in a fit of rage, blaming her for Max's accident. Theories suggested that Adam may have sexually assaulted Rebecca and then staged the hanging to cover his tracks. A jury ultimately found Adam Shaknai civilly liable for Rebecca's death and awarded her family $5 million in damages. It's important to note that a civil trial has a lower burden of proof than a criminal trial. It only requires a preponderance of the evidence, not beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, that's exactly what it was. I think there was a preponderance of evidence.
So there's enough for people to make an assumption that it was him, basically?
Well, just by listening to what we've said today, I think that's the conclusion most people will come to. I actually disagree with that in some respects, though. I don't think it was a confrontation and that got out of hand. I think that's been planned. It's too weird not to be planned.
Yeah, I think the crime scene itself is so bizarre that you couldn't just do that off the cuff.
No, there's too much thought being put into it, I think.
You're not going to randomly, in a fit of rage, kill someone and then think to bind their hands with those knots, stuff the gag in their mouth, throw them over the balcony, write the message on the door. Do you know what I mean? It's too many things.
You might sort of bash them or something and then run away or throw them over the balcony, but you're not going to have all those elephants. You're not gonna have all those elephants involved.
What were you gonna say? Elements.
Elements involved, not elephants. Although in this case, it wouldn't surprise me if there was an elephant involved.
So then, really, it would be safe to assume that he's gone in that house, he's killed her, he's done this whole thing, he's set this whole scene up, wrote on the door and everything, and then gone back to the guest house, and then came in to call 911 and cut her down and pretend that he's the one that's found her.
Yeah, that's not beyond the possibilities, is it? I mean, when did she actually die, though? When was the time of death? It could have been 1 o'clock in the morning. He's probably, I mean, to make it look real, that's what he's going to have to do, isn't it? And if he's gone to the trouble of doing all this other stuff, that's nothing, is it, to go back and just
lie
low for
that?
A few hours? Yeah, that makes it look more real. But, you know, going back to his call, his 911 call, and he sounded calm and composed. Well, you know, maybe he was calm and composed because he knew exactly what he was doing, and it was no surprise to him that she was dead. So,
well, I think it says a lot that even though, you know, this wasn't in a criminal court, it was a civil trial, it still says a lot that he was found to be liable for her death.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a monetary penalty, isn't there, for that? You know, it's not imprisonment or anything.
So I wonder why they didn't charge him criminally. Do you think it was just lack of evidence?
Yeah, I think, as they say, the preponderance of evidence was not enough for a criminal trial.
And I suppose if they risk it and take him to trial with some circumstantial evidence and they lose, he then can't be prosecuted again for that crime,
what,
can
is that?
He?
Double jeopardy, isn't it? But yeah, true. Yeah, maybe.
So maybe it just wasn't worth the risk of trying it.
Well, I think the key words are beyond a reasonable doubt. So there was probably some, I'm not going to say elephants again, some element of doubt there that it could have been a suicide. I can't see it myself. But, you know, if you put that before a jury, you've really got to prove that case for a criminal outcome.
Adam Shaknai has always denied any involvement in Rebecca's death, calling the accusations ridiculous. Jonah Shaknai has also defended his brother and supported the conclusion of suicide. Well, of course he's going to defend his brother, isn't he? Why would he not?
Well, of course he would, because I think he was also angry with Rebecca, and it didn't sound like they had a very good relationship, to be honest. So that was probably, you know, the final straw, really, wasn't it? That she inadvertently killed his son. But, you know, he may have been behind it, or Dina may have been behind it. I think it was definitely a perpetrator from within the ranks of the family, because just the fact that she was displayed so publicly, it would need to be somebody who knew that that would embarrass her and know that that was sort of something that her upbringing would not allow, if you like. So to do that, I think that points to somebody that knows her.
Over a decade later, the case of Rebecca Zahal remains a hotbed of speculation. Here are the main theories. Number one, suicide. This is the official ruling. Proponents of this theory believe that Rebecca's grief and guilt over Max's accident drove her to take her own life. They argue that the unusual nature of her death reflects her emotional turmoil. Number two, homicide by Adam Shaknai. Many believe Adam was involved, citing his proximity to the crime scene, the lack of DNA evidence, and the civil trial verdict. Number three, involvement by Jonah or Dina Shaknai. Some theorists suggest that Jonah or Dina Shaknai could have played a role in Rebecca's death, possibly as an act of revenge or blame for Max's accident. However, there is little concrete evidence to support these claims. And finally, number four, a third-party killer. Could someone else have been responsible? The lack of physical evidence leaves room for this possibility, but no other suspects have ever been identified. So I think you're right in what you're saying. I think it's, for me, there's only three options. There's only three people that it could have been, yeah. Or it's an accumulation of all of those three people, which is Jonah Shaknai, Adam Shaknai, and his ex-wife Dina. And I don't know whether it's a collaborative effort to get rid of Rebecca, or whether it's between Jonah and Adam, or whether Adam's just decided to go and do it and Jonah's just protecting him as his brother.
Or Dina's decided to do it and they've covered up, or, you know, it's definitely some involvement there. I mean, what are the chances of her being alone in the mansion, him being in the guest house, of a strange person coming in and doing this?
And I think also, cannot be a coincidence that Max's accident happened 2 days before this, and now all of a sudden, the person that was caring for him at the time is now also dead in the same house, hanging from the balcony.
Well, she's the one who's got the blame for it, and she blamed herself, but, you know, she had no prior depression issues or anything. I mean, you know, yes, she would be depressed about what had happened, wouldn't she? She'd feel guilty, and her mental health probably wasn't that great, but that isn't, to me, is not a suicide.
And also, maybe I'm looking into this too much, but is there something to be said for the fact that we know that Max fell over the second floor balcony and now Rebecca's hanging from the second floor balcony?
That's what I was going to say to you before. It's like a parallel thing, isn't it?
It's weird, isn't
it? It's almost like he went that way, so you're gonna go that way.
Yeah, exactly. That's just popped into my head then, and that's actually quite terrifying. So what do you think happened to Rebecca Zahal? Was it a tragic suicide, or was it something far more sinister? Rebecca's family continues to fight for justice, but as of today, her death remains officially ruled a suicide. Whatever the truth may be, one thing is certain. Rebecca's story deserves to be remembered, not just for the mystery, but for the vibrant life she led before it all unraveled and came to a tragic end.
Well, that's the sad thing, isn't it? Because that is what everyone will remember about her. And I think the perpetrator wanted that to be the final statement.
Well, people are always going to remember her for that crime scene, aren't they? And how bizarre it was. And all of those components.
That's basically all you do think about, isn't it? You don't think of it really as a person, do you? Which is awful. Of the life she had before and everything. It all comes down to this one moment, doesn't it? But, you know, I just do not understand how he wasn't found guilty, to be honest. I mean, as we say, there probably wasn't enough evidence. But I think if we were the prosecutors, Adam Shacknight had been going down, wouldn't he?
Well, yeah, but I suppose you can't send someone down without even a shred of evidence. And it sounds like they've got none, to be honest. They've got no prints. They've got no witnesses.
The prints thing is another thing to me. That there was no prints there, do you know what I mean?
I think, you know, the bottom line of this is we're both in agreement with the fact that we do not believe that this is suicide for one second.
It's definitely not suicide. I know it's not. But who did it? We can't say for sure, but I know who I think did it.
And again, now that he went to this civil trial and he's paid them $5 million and stuff, it's probably always just going to stay at that now. There's never going to be an actual resolution.
It's just really bad for a family, isn't it? Awful to think that somebody got away with that. And they probably know who did it.
And like I said to you yesterday, I told you I was doing this case, and I've never researched this case. I've never listened to it. I didn't know the full story. So I wanted to make my own mind up. And I mean, I feel like there is only one conclusion that I can come to, which is the fact that I think it's Adam Shacknight.
Okay, everyone, that's it for this week on Murder, Mother and Me.
Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you again next time.
And remember, if you can't do the time,
don't do the crime.